Okay, mettez cette terre. Front of the chair there, if you like. Over. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Shall we start with the meditation today? Get ourselves in our meditation posture. Use your seat if you want, Bhante. Bhante, Venerable Ami. The light there, Bill. Okay, thank you. You start with an upright position. Sense of uprightness. So the mind is awake. If we like, we can just start by sending the mind through the body. From the top of the head down towards the toes,
Just relaxing the body, coming into the present. And then again from the toes back up towards the head. Just seeing if there's any difficult parts in the body. Just bringing kindness to that area. Any pains, just welcoming them. No need for aversion, just acceptance. Just looking on evenly. So the legs are relaxed, the waist is relaxed, the belly, abdomen region is relaxed, the lower back, middle back, upper back is relaxed. The diaphragm, solar plexus, chest, the heart, the lungs, relax. Just become aware of the lungs filling up and emptying, allowing the breath just to become comfortable. In-breath is comfortable, out-breath is comfortable. Relax the shoulders, the upper arms, the elbows, lower arms, wrists, hands, fingers and thumbs. Relax the neck, the chin, the jaw, the gums, the teeth, the tongue. Might notice a soft smile of relaxation, the corners of the eyes or the corners of the mouth. It's really relaxing. Coming into the present, relaxing the cheeks, the nose, bags under the eyes, the temples, the eyebrows, the eyes themselves, and the whole organ of the eyes, which is the optical nerve and the eyes. Just relax. We have our physical eyes. We have our spiritual eyes. Just relax the eyes. Just become aware of the forehead. If there's any anxiety or tension remaining, just relax the forehead, the scalp, the ears, the whole head. Whole body. Just let the body look after itself. Any pain comes up in a meditation, you can just see it like a bubble. When a raindrop strikes a river, sometimes a bubble appears. A bubble arises, floats along for a while, then pops. Just a bubble. It's just a feeling. We don't have to be involved. Put down the body. Bring our attention to the mind. See if our mind is wholesome or unwholesome. What is our state in the present moment? We just welcome our mind. Down the past, the future, proliferation. Just be content right here with the meditation. We'll do a breath meditation. Well, now's the time to take up your meditation theme. I'll give a guided meditation on the breath. Maybe the word Buddha, Bud with the in-breath, Do with the out-breath, which means awake, or the Buddha, the awakened one, waking up. Otherwise, you can be aware of the tip of the nostril, the tip of the upper lip, or we can follow the flow of the breath. You just adjust the practice. So we have a meditation object. Stick with it for the meditation. Just be aware of the in-breath as the present moment, the out-breath as the present moment. Maybe the feeling or the texture or the temperature or the length. Just know there is an in-breath. Just know the out-breath. Just see if the mind goes off, is lost. It's just flowing out into the world. When we can, we let go, come back, patiently and gently re-establish meditation. Having a sense of metta to ourselves. Breath, be comfortable, maybe a bit longer or a bit shorter, the in-breath or the out-breath. So we have a sense of inner ease. Things are good enough. We can increase our attention and be aware of the whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath. tranquilizing formations of the in-breath. Tranquilizing the formations of the out-breath. The building of it. Total attention. Of inner luminosity, tranquilizing the in breath, tranquilizing the out breath. peaceful sense of ease with the in-breath. Peaceful sense of ease with the out-breath. Just take the time. See how the mind is after half an hour of meditation. And see what the causes and the effects are, so we can become skillful. Also take our time coming out of the meditation, so we might take this peace and kindness into our lives. Are you ready? May I open your eyes? So, we have cause, and we have effect. So if we don't meditate, what's the effect? If we're angry, what's the effect? If we're greedy, what's the effect? If we're lost in the world, what's the effect? So, the Buddha teaches us mindfulness of the body, because the body is something coarse. We have the discourse on mindfulness of the body, and this is like the post that we tie our mind to. We tie all the senses to, so the eye, ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind, we tie to our meditation. And breath meditation is good for most people, but outside the meditation, we also need to be putting in causes, to have mindfulness. And so whether it's awareness of body posture, or in Thailand, they use the word Buddha, using the word Buddha, reciting it mentally, or even with the breath. Some people can be aware of the breath through the day. It's a matter of finding something that interests us and also sticking to it. So, you know, if we keep planting trees and not watering them, they're just going to die. So it might seem good one day. Oh, yeah, this meditation, this is good. And then if you forget it, and then the next time you meditate, you don't know how to meditate again. So that's not going to bear any fruit. So consistency is important. If we don't have consistency, then we're going to be putting in the causes very slowly. So the effect is going to be very slow. And so in that kind of meditation, I just did the first four, mainly of the first four foundations of mindfulness of breathing. And even that is just enough. You know, long breath, short breath, aware of the bodily formations, the whole of the breath, and then tranquilizing the bodily formations, or volition, or the building of the breath, the word sankhara, kaya sankhara, bodily formations. And so, I mean, that's enough, like even for our whole meditation. The thing is, we've got to make it interesting for our mind. And the only way we can make it interesting is by practice. It's not going to be some special trick. It's not going to be anything like that. But it's just about doing the work. I mean, sometimes there is skillful means we can use that people have. But if we always go chasing after these things, then we're never going to sit down and actually do the practice. And I remember when I was earlier in my practice, I liked Ajahn Chah's idea. Like, to begin with, you just, if people are Buddhist, then, you know, the main goal is first to become a Sotapanna. And Sajjan Chah's initial aspiration was, well, whether it takes me one life or 10,000 lives, now I'll give my life to the Dhamma. But it doesn't mean it's going to be lazy. He's just saying, when he's at the start of his practice, he wasn't going to stress himself out over it. He's willing to do the work. But that means you have to follow the instructions. It's like getting a bottle of medicine. You can read that bottle for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's not going to do you any good unless you actually take it. And then if you only take it when you want to take it, when you feel like taking it, still not going to do you any good. So you have to follow the instructions. And then if you don't do it for a long time, well, maybe now you're going to take the medication for months instead of weeks. So this is like our meditation. And this is why the Buddha is called the great doctor. Because, he looks at all beings who aren't enlightened as mentally insane. A whole lot of us. Because we're running around with delusion. And somebody once asked Sajjan Chah, but I don't see delusion. I don't see delusion. And Ajahn Chah said, what's the horse you're riding on? So it's, the point is that, you know, we can't trust our own minds. You know, we can trust when we're putting in the right causes and we're following noble instructions. So that's why, you know, in our lineage, we have the great teachers from Thailand. Like before Ajahn Chah, you know, comes back from Ajahn Sao and Ajahn Mun. We have great teachers like Ajahn Mahabhoa and Ajahn Tate and Ajahn Chah and many others coming down to the present. And this is where our tradition and the monks that we know of come from. And, you know, they had to put up with a lot of hardship to bring us the Dhamma. And so if we're not ever stuck in our practice, then, you know, there is a lot of books and on basics of meditation. So it's just about finding a teacher that inspires us and then following the instructions. Because if we keep thinking, well, you know, I do a bit of this, a bit of that, and then it's a very slow way of practice. And but without the mindfulness through the day, then when we look in the mirror at night, you know, we're going to have bloodshot eyes. Because we just let our monkey mind run and do whatever it wants all day long. And so really, actually, when we're teaching meditation, what we're teaching is mindfulness. So that until we're able to sustain our mind on our meditation, you know, that's called samadhi, which is like strength of mind, the ability to focus the mind. And but we need the formal postures to train ourselves so we know what we're actually doing. So, you know, whether it's 20 minutes a day or an hour a day, you know, that's like a good start for somebody starting meditation, because, you know, you can start to see how our minds work. You know, oh, I've got lots of thoughts of lust, I've got lots of thoughts of greed. And then in the meditation, we're learning to let go of those things. And then, but as we start to identify how we think, we're going to know what our coarser faults are, because it's right there in our thoughts. It's been showing us. And then we can start working against them. So it's one of the simplest teachings in Buddhism is overcome by opposites. And this is why a lot of the Thai Ajahns love Ajahn Chah's teaching, because he was one who's liberated through wisdom. And the way he would teach people is, it doesn't matter whether you've got, you know, a lot of knowledge of Buddhism or just a little knowledge of Buddhism. Just look at your own mind. Solve your problems there. The purpose of our meditation is to start to learn to restrain our senses, to not be elated and dejected by everything that's happening around us. As it says in the Dhammapada, no, don't take on the adversities of others. Don't look at their omissions and contritions of sin. Look at our own actions. You know, and the other way is, don't worry about the minds of others. You know, look after our own minds. This is the work. Doesn't matter if the person next to us is on fire. You know, we still have to look after our own minds. And so this means that if we put down the problems of the world, You know, I mean, the Buddha is the one who had to carry the world on his shoulders to become a Buddha. That's why it says to become a Buddha is a difficult path. I don't remember the Buddha recommending everybody to become Buddhas. The reason he became a Buddha was to help beings, because most of us are so stuck in delusion that, you know, to have access to the Dhamma is an amazing thing. And so we just got to start where we are, but at least we have an aspiration if we are Buddhists, like, okay, you know, Sotapanna, first stage of enlightenment, because that's where in Buddhism the, you know, the gates of hell are closed, no longer can be reborn in the woeful plains, ghost realm, animal realm. And if you've never heard about these things, a nice way to read a few stories out of the Jataka tales, which are the past lives of the Buddha. So, you know, he went through a lot of suffering, and we can see some of his trials and tribulations there. And people who are just new on the path, then it's just, and may not have that level of faith or understanding yet, then we just look at our own minds and we solve our suffering there, and that's enough, you know. When anger arises, we just know we have an angry mind. Now's not a time to act. You know, when greed arises, we see the greedy octopus. When delusion arises, we see, you know, we're just getting caught up in things that don't matter. If death comes tonight, what will we be doing with our time? And so, it's like in Buddhism, there's a thing called the fourfold protection, which is, you know, a lot of monks, they may have one meditation object, but they also use skillful means to solve their mental states through the day. So, you know, if you're angry, then this is why we practice metta. We always have benevolence to all beings. That means one day then when we're angry, we can immediately see anger is arising, and we can turn it into benevolence. We can wish that well, the being well, and then wish all beings well. And at that moment, that anger ceases. So to begin with, we're just ceasing suffering one moment at a time. But the more we practice, then the more we start to see our faults. You know, maybe some people might easily lie, or some people might easily steal, or some people might talk too much, or some people have a tendency to aversion or to anger. Whatever it is in our own mind, you know, this is why we meditate, this is why we practice, is to learn to overcome these sufferings. And so this is what it means by look after our own mind, don't look at the minds of others. And if we do see faults in another person, if we see faults in their speech, then we should look at their actions. If we see faults in their actions, then we should look at their speech. If we see faults in both of them, we should just say, well, their karma is their own, and we don't have to get involved. When we start to see how much of our suffering comes from us going outside, so this is when the mind is sent outside, that suffering, because it's lost. It's lost in greed, hatred, and delusion. Lost in lust and aversion. And so the idea of mindfulness of the body means we have something to tether the mind to so it doesn't think. Because when has proliferation ever done us any good? Just sit down for an hour or two and just let your mind proliferate on whatever it wants and see how you are after an hour or two. See if your life has improved. And then you see the truth of these things, that the mind is just an untrained monkey. As it says in the Dhammapada, it's like a fish thrashing in shallow water. And so you just, rather than getting upset about it, you just say, okay, the mind is untrained. It's like a fish thrashing in shallow water. So let go of that, and then you come back to your mindfulness object. So really, meditation in the early stages is just training in mindfulness. Because until we have strong mindfulness, starting to become unremitting mindfulness, it's very hard for us to keep a peaceful mind and to develop wisdom that penetrates to the heart. And what inspired me once was when I was, I've always liked the wisdom part of Venerable Sariputta, the right-hand disciple of the Lord Buddha. And you know, these are being, so the Buddha is somebody, he practiced for four asaṅkhayas, which is like four incalculable aeons, and 100,000 kalpas, which is 100,000 universe cycles, since he made the aspiration to be a Buddha. It's a very, very long time. And then it's said that one aeon, one universe cycle, is like if somebody went to this massive rock a few miles wide and sweeped it with a silk cloth every 100 years, once every 100 years, sooner would that rock disappear and an aeon would be over. So we're talking about one universe cycle is an incredibly long period. And so we're talking, you know, millions of universe cycles. So, but then the great disciple of a Buddha and the top 100 disciples of the Buddha, they're all just beings who practice together with the Buddha for many lifetimes as well. So, so when the Buddha had us emulate, it's like, well, if you're a bhikkhu, if you were a monk, then you would emulate Sariputta and Moggallana. If you were a nun, you would emulate the main nuns. If you were a male layperson, you would emulate the top male disciples of the Buddha. If you were a laywoman, you would emulate the top female disciples of the Buddha at the time. Because these are beings who had great parami, great spiritual perfection. And so if we want something to emulate, then we choose, the beings that have done a lot of work. And so this was in the Anguttara Nikaya's, I think, 2s, the Buddha says that. And it's a very nice thing that if we don't have something to emulate, if we don't have something to mold ourselves again, then, the mind tends to just decline by its natural course. It doesn't have any standard to hold it up against, anything to move towards. And what came up once for me was thinking about Venerable Sariputta. He says, it's just about aligning the causes. You know, it's like, I read somewhere once, it's like one little domino, knocks over another domino, knocks over another domino. And within about 30 dominoes, because each one can get small force, so it can knock over a larger domino, and a larger domino. Within about 30 dominoes, you can knock over the moon. It doesn't take much. So this is like our practice. People feel, you can't do it, it's not possible. And all these kind of things, this is just doubt. You put down the doubt and we just put in the causes, because when you put in the causes, one cause hits another cause, hits another cause, and then these things happen. Or a charge simile, it's like a guy trying to make fire with a stick. He gets these two sticks and starts rubbing them together, rubbing, 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 rubbing. After about 5 minutes, he gets tired, so he stops. And then another 5 minutes later, he starts rubbing again. And after 5 minutes, he stops. And after a few times, he just gives up. But if he just rubbed for 10 minutes, there would have been fire. It doesn't take much to get two sticks to make fire, but you've got to be persistent. So because he didn't put in the causes, no fire resulted. But he thought, there's no fire, this is impossible. But he wasn't following the instructions, he wasn't doing it correct. And so this is like our practice, that no matter how long it takes, if we just bit by bit learn to put in the causes, then the results will be sure. And that's what the Four Noble Truths, which is like the basic teaching in Buddhism that's unique. The Buddha said any teaching that has the Four Noble Truths in it, that's basically, that will lead people to Nibbana. So Four Noble Truths is the definition of the Buddha's teachings. And suffering is to be known, and knowledge of suffering, knowledge of the cause of suffering, knowledge of the end of suffering, and knowledge of the path leading to the end of suffering. So suffering exists because of attachment, because of desire, because of clinging, because of craving. Because of all these things, we go out into the world and we attach to sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, and we think about them as if the past existed, the future existed, and everything was eternal. And we want what we want, and we don't want what we don't want, and we're ignorant of everything else. So that's just all burning with suffering. We're in the middle of this ball of molten lava and we don't even see it. And so that's the knowledge of suffering. And then the path leading to the end of the suffering is the Eightfold Path. And as I've said, did a talk on it once before, one of the first way of looking at right view is the 10 wholesome and unwholesome courses of action. So basically an extension of the, so you have abstention from killing, abstention from stealing, abstention from sexual misconduct, and then abstention from lying, abstention from divisive speech, such as gossip, abstention from malicious speech, abstention from idle chatter, abstention from thoughts of covetedness, this is basically greed, abstention from thoughts of hatred, and then right view. And so that's the cause and effect. If we just knew those 10 things and did those 10 things perfectly, we would all be enlightened. But so the point is, whatever teaching we look at it in Buddhism, the Buddha wanted us to look at teachings that lead us out of suffering. So there are different teachings, but we just get the ones that are suitable to us. Some people investigating the five khandhas of existence, the five groups of existence of a being is interesting. Some people suffering is interesting. Some people breath meditation, they just love their meditation. But we find something that suits our temperament. And then the practice becomes easy because we're interested in it. When we're interested, we're earnest and we're keen. So this is why they say 84,000 doors of the Dhamma. Is even at the time of the Buddha, there was one monk who just saw, I think it was a big fish eating a smaller fish. And he took that as his meditation object and became enlightened. So a lot of the time, it's just that we're not being persistent. We're not continuously putting in the causes. This is why it says mindfulness is supreme. Because when we have mindfulness, eventually then we can develop all the four foundations of mindfulness. Because we have unremitting mindfulness, we know where the mind is. And so basically the stages of enlightenment, it's only when a being becomes an arahant that their mindfulness is supreme. It cannot degenerate from that state. So when we're doing the breath meditation, it's great, or our little meditations, but then finding ways of being mindful through the day. So then we don't get lost in our moods. You know, we don't get lost. Just ask ourselves, you know, what is the quality of this mind state? You know, in Buddhism it's citta, which is mind, but there's different minds arising and passing away, so it's closer to mind state in English. What is this mind state that's arising? Is it wholesome or unwholesome? Because if it's unwholesome, then any actions that are arising at the moment are unwholesome. Actions of body, actions of speech, actions of mind. The mind is unwholesome, and all the actions are unwholesome. Actually, it doesn't take much to turn back on ourselves, but without a little bit of mindfulness, it's hard to do. You know, I myself have really found Ajahn Tate's teachings very useful over the years, and so I would recommend that, finding, you know, somebody's teachings that really suits you, and then following the instructions. You know, like Ajahn Chah said, you start with a reasonable aspiration, so it's not, doesn't feel like it's too much pressure on the mind, and then it's about getting ourselves to a point of steady practice, where we know what we're doing, when we're doing it. If we're not doing it, we know that, and then, you know, as soon as we can, we're back to doing it again. So it's, we get to that point where we don't want to fall away from practice. And because, you know, the world will come and go. There will always be birth, old age, sickness, death. You know, we know this story. It's all around us. And so the question is, when are we going to, you know, when we come to the end of our lives, from what we brought with us this life, and what can we take with us? And the only thing we can take with us is the effects of our actions. And so if we don't spend time developing the mind, then we might be a bit sad on our deathbed. Like, oh, what did I do that for? But actually the Buddha said, because we practice, and then if we haven't attained at that point, then when you die, you just let go and move on. So the highest thing to do is the moment of death, you just let go of all your loved ones, let go of your body and your mind, let go of everything, and you just move on. You don't even look back. You don't even think, how's this going to affect so-and-so? So obviously to get to that point takes some practice. But that's the kind of mind that the Buddha wanted people to have. So it's already time. That's a little talk on cause and effect. You're welcome. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, in all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Yata varivaha pura pariparanti sagarang evang eva ito dinam petanang upagapati chitang patitang tunghang kipameva samichatu sepe parantu sangapa chando panaraso yata manichotiraso yata Vityo viva chantu sa baruko vina sattu mate pavantvan tarayo sukhiti kayuko pavva kapiva nana sili sanichang buddha pachayino chataro dhamma vatanti Ayuvano Sukham Balam.